with John Rhodes, our special guest. We'll be back with John as we talk about Lizard Man. We're also going to be talking about some other interesting issues just ahead on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie, John Rhodes with us. John, you mentioned something fascinating, rumors of 2012, as it had to do with the return of some lizard people. What did you mean by that?
Well, I get into this a little bit into your upcoming After Dark magazine newsletter magazine, which I've been interviewed by Lex this month with. But when we look forward in time and towards the event termination point between 2012 and 2013, it's connected very symbolically with that of the snake or the serpent, and the snake or the serpent very strongly connected also to Mexico because of in antiquity. You look back in their historical timeline, you see where Quetzalcoatl or Kukulkan, the Mayan Kukulkan, Viracocha, and all these other great benevolent gods, the ones who did not require human sacrifice, were associated with a snake. And then you recognize the UFO activity happening over Mexico, primarily taking place in July 11th, 1991, during a solar eclipse. And then you look forward to the 2012-2013 termination point, which is the Chinese calendar, the year of the serpent and the year of the dragon. As in a matter of fact, it's not just they divide them up into the four quadrants of earth, air, wind, and fire. These two happen to be the water elements, which brings us to the age of Aquarius. And when you look at see what might be happening, the ancient Mayans who did actually disappear in mass from the surface looks like they may have actually retreated deeper and deeper underground in that part of the world and come into contact with some sort of a reptilian humanoid civilization. And then around 2012-2013 is supposedly the prophesied return of the ones who gave them the original calendar. They didn't say the world was going to end. They said there would be a new calendar. And in order for a new calendar to be made, perhaps the beings that helped them achieve that type of intelligence status to make those remarkable calendars may also make a reappearance.
That's fascinating, John Rhodes. Something's going on, isn't it?
Yeah, something's going on. And it actually kind of it helps us get I think it gives humanity a sense of light at the end of the tunnel that if change can't be had through some sort of voting on this planet, which we've tried for how many years now to try and make things go the right way, and even though we get given all these promises, regardless of what political parties get in office, they seem to all be working for the same goals, and that's for that draconian corporate, you know, groups out there that seem to run the world. But maybe something has to come along, something much bigger, something much more wonderful, in order to kind of shock us out of where we are now and say perhaps we have a new vision of things to come.
John Rhodes, let's also get into some other things that you've been working on.
Oh,
and
yeah,
that has to do with
the
animal mutilations,
great, yep,
too. And then next hour, we'll just open up the phone lines, blanket phone lines for you. What's the latest on these cattle mutilations in Montana?
Absolutely fantastic research I've been doing in as regards to what I'm discovering up here in Montana. It certainly does look like we're getting possibly down to opening up some doors of perception here and figuring out why the mutilations may be occurring. When I was talking to Sheriff Tom Kuka, who you know and I've had on your show before, in regards to tracking down, and I work a lot with law enforcement, whether it's out there in South Carolina or here in Montana, they seem to be more available than people can possibly imagine for tracking stuff like this down. But when I was talking to him, I was wondering if we can't perhaps locate who's doing it and how they're doing it, which we've been focusing on for a lot of decades now. Perhaps we should look at the motives as to what is actually happening. And what I did is I went out there and got a mapping program that is available to everybody, the Google Earth mapping program. And I started making place marks, going back through all the records of all the mutilations that happened in Montana since the mid-1970s when the big rush happened. And I started plotting them out on the map. Now, this map is actually available. If you go to my site at reptoids.com, the bottom left link, there is a link there that will take you to a page that talks about, it has a link in there that actually shows a map in which I've been able to chart out all the animal mutilations as well as UFO sightings in a given area. Now, what the strange thing I started recognizing in plotting this out is that they all seem to be on a line going from the northwest to the southeast. Now, this also happens to be the prevalent direction of wind flow in the state. So I was wondering if there was something about the wind. But then I noticed that there were other concentrations of cattle mutilations happening outside this wind flow current. And when I started looking deeper into it, I started realizing that these concentration areas are also connected to the main areas through water or streams and rivers. And I started thinking to myself, now, exactly what's going on here? Because obviously we know that they're charting things out and they're measuring something. And when I started thinking it has to do with water and air, I then started looking at the furthest things upwind that are in the state where the cattle mutilation started happening. And I noticed that in that upper side, which is in the Valier and DePoyer area where John Peterson had his cow mutilated back in 2006, up on the very northwest side of it, there are pig farming communities. And so I thought, well, that's kind of interesting. Let me look further into this and see what might be there.
How many different farms are we talking about, or did that matter?
Well, it doesn't really matter. When we get to the point, it'll make sense to you. There's about maybe four or five major pig operations up there and cattle feeding operations.
And when you say major, these are huge.
Well, yeah, they can be. Sometimes some of them will only have 2,000 or 3,000 pigs. Others will have up to maybe 4,000 or 5,000 pigs. And the thing about this is that I started thinking, well, what's going on here? And I did some further research, and I discovered that in the state of Montana, back in 2003, Judge Hansel up in Helena, Montana, which is where I live, had a case come up before him where some residents around and farmers around a pig feeding operation in central Montana had sued to see if they could get the pig farm to actually either shut down its operations or be more tightly controlled in as far as how it's releasing fecal matter from the pigs. And, you know, pigs create a lot of pig fecal matter. A pig will produce four times as much fecal matter as a human in a day. And this pig waste, because pigs are so close to humans as far as their physiology and their internal organs and their digestive tract, that when fecal matter is taken from pig farms and spread into irrigation fields, that irrigated water actually can travel off the fields through rain runoff into the water table or be carried high up into the wind and be blown downwind. And the judge up here ordered a statewide environmental review of the effects of cattle feeding operations and pig feeding operations on the environment. For a period of 3 to 4 years, the Department of Environmental Quality disregarded the judge's order. And they got together with the Livestock Association and forced through legislation laws that actually nullified and vacated the judge's order. I thought, well, this is kind of interesting. What is going on here that perhaps they would want to protect? I understand that it can be expensive to do testings of these operations.
Sure, of course.
But when it comes down to things, I don't understand why it would be such a problem. Then the journey got even more mysterious because I started doing more research and finding out that the EPA produced a report. It was a comprehensive 185-page report that you can download from my site that details how fecal matter from pig feeding operations and cattle feeding operations can carry the deadly MRSA, which everybody has been talking about lately. It's an antibacterial resistant strain of infectious disease in humans and animals. Pig fecal matter can carry MRSA into the wind and into the water and deposit it into streams and water tables. And the pathogens can actually carry in the wind and be carried far downwind and deposited onto fields, crops, into lakes, and over areas, including Great Falls, mind you, where people are breathing this in. Now, The report also got into detailing how over in Europe they have found, in, especially in areas like Denmark, 80% of the pig farmers tested had MRSA colonized in their nasal passages. Now, this is a deadly disease. If you, for example, cut yourself and 80%. Then wipe your nose on your cut, you can now start getting an infectious disease in which there's no antibiotics that'll take care of it.
Right.
And over in Europe, they said that we've been feeding antibiotics since the mid-1970s. It always goes back to this huge launch of where these mutilations were happening. Back in the mid-1970s, when we started, the corporations took over the pig farming and cattle farming operations here in America and started producing cattle and pig farms in mass, I mean, big pig factories, they started shooting them up with these antibiotics. Now, after a while, 80% of all antibiotics move through an animal and are deposited in their fecal matter. So what happens is the our resistance to these pathogens becomes less and less, and we start becoming more and more sick. Over in Europe, the World Health Organization has actually started a movement to ban all use of antibiotics in meat, in pig farming and cattle feeding operations, and several European countries, including Canada, have noticed a correlation between MRSA and cattle feeding operations personnel and their families and pets. Now,
that's frightening, John.
Oh, it's terribly frightening, and especially when the World Health Organization points out to the United States and says the United States refuses to test their retail meat for MRSA. And they found over in Europe that MRSA is in 15% of the retail meat on the short store shelves.
Jeez.
Now, I am under the impression that somebody has been surgically testing these cows, especially along these areas where pathogens may have drifted in the wind and deposited on their fields or in their drinking water supplies, to see what the effects of the pathogens have been on the cattle. Thank God they're not testing humans the same way.
Absolutely.
But they are certainly leaving these animals behind in the field for us to find. I've made the point time and time again, if it was anybody that was trying to keep it a secret, they would just dump, they would incinerate the bodies, the carcasses, or they'd dump them up in the mountains where they would disappear forever, but they're actually laying them out in display for us to find them. We have to wonder who is trying to tell us something. They're trying to tell us something. Could it be that the contamination of the water table and our food supplies here in the United States could affect us all over the country, including all over the world, because we sell meat and we sell stock genetics and semen all around the world for livestock heads. Could it be that somebody's trying to point out to us a biological disaster on our horizon, that if we look carefully enough and force enough political comment on the subject, we could perhaps get these operations under more tight control, to where they would dispose of these pig waste and animal waste properly instead of irrigating their fields with them and spreading them to the wind?
This could very well be. The question is, who's trying to let us know? And do you think this is extraterrestrial assistance or something else?
Well, I think it could possibly be extraterrestrial assistance, but more so, I'm thinking that it might be interterrestrial, in other words, other underground civilizations of human and non-human entities, that their environment is affected by our environment. If we poison the water table above ground, that might be feeding their environment underground as well. So they have something at stake also. So it could be either one of these groups. To me, I'm not so much concerned on which group it is, to tell you the truth. My main concern at this point is saying, oh my God, what if this is really the case? What if they're really trying to say, listen, look at the signs we've laid down for you and start doing your own studies, because if you attend to it now, you may be avoiding a disaster in the future.
That's a good point. Good point. Did you take any samples?
Oh, yeah.
And with what you've done, were you concerned about your own health?
Well, let's put it this way. I thought twice about keeping those samples in the fridge.
Yeah, exactly. I don't blame you.
I now realize, and I've spoken to the sheriff about it, that when these cattle mutilation areas mutilations are approached, that definite care should be taken, because if there's a fecal, if there's a pathogenic contamination of the carcass or of the soils around it, then it's very dangerous for anybody to be handling dead animals. I have a chart actually on the site now, through those links I told you about, that actually graphically displays how fecal waste can poison the community. And it's actually turning out that there are so many routes at which it gets through and into the community that it's actually very, very frightening. The handling dead animal carcasses is just one part of it. The research has led to a point of which I'm starting to get a little bit more politically motivated, because I discovered that the EPA, despite its own reports and despite the reports coming from scientific communities all around the world about the dangers of disposing of pig waste and cattle waste in irrigation waters and into the air for fertilizers and such, that the EPA is being pressured by animal feeding operations to allow them to put large amounts of fecal waste into the air through misting processes and through irrigations without actually notifying the government of their intent or their processes of doing so. They want to become completely exempt from any kind of environmental laws when it comes to disposing of fecal waste in that manner. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable that they would do such a thing, especially with the scientific information coming across. You go to my website, I have a link there where you can go to a government website where you can actually list and put in a petition to stop the EPA from allowing that law or that action to be passed. It's imperative that everybody does that.
I mean, John, they just don't care. I mean, they just do it anyway.
They don't care, but they only care, and they will start caring as soon as we start flooding their phones and start flooding their offices with physical mail. Email, I'm not sure it matters anymore. You know, those big mail bags really had punch, you know, in the old days when they had to carry 20 bags of mail. You know, that was seen throughout the offices. People were always like, oh, my God, what's going on that deserved all that? Nowadays, an email, I don't know if it gets registered as much. Certainly phone calls do, and I believe everybody should voice their opinion about it.
Well, absolutely. John, we're going to continue our dialogue. Next half hour, I want to talk with you about the hollow earth. You've done some work there, and I can't let you get away with
that. We do have a new double mutilation case that I think you'd be interested in hearing. So let's talk about that.
Now, whereabouts will that be?
That was in DePoyer in 2007, and the case is so interesting. As a matter of physical evidence was actually left behind on the scene, and it may be connected in some ways to the Delphi case of 1971, which is one of the most important and best-standing UFO sighting and landing events in history.
Hey, by the way, with Lizard Man, did anybody report lights or craft or anything like that?
In the mutilation areas?
No, with Lizard Man.
They did, although it wasn't usually associated with the times when they saw them. The lights have been seen over Skateboard Swamp. They might be swamp gas as well, because we know that does occur, but there have been very rapid moving lights in the skies over there that make sharp angled turns. So just as we're interested what might be down there, either something's down there as well or something else is interested like we are.
I think Liston had the greatest line of the week when he said he had to be careful they didn't try to make him look like Barney from Andy Griffith Show.
One bullet Barney.
I could just see that. He's well, a great guy. How old is he now?
I'm not sure of Liston's age. I didn't want to ask him, but he's been having health problems, and it's taken a lot out of him. And of course, you know, every move is an effort now.
Yeah, I didn't want to keep him up too late.
Yeah, we didn't want to keep him up, and it was absolutely a fantastic opportunity to have him on board.
Absolutely.
One day when we finally do find out the reality of this subject matter, it's going to be historic that you actually had him on the air.
All right, John, we're going to talk about the double mutilations, and then we'll get into the hollow earth theory next on Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Norrie. Next hour, we'll open up the phone lines with our special guest, John Rhodes. We've got more to talk with him about. Hollow Earth, more on cattle mutilations when we come right back. And welcome to Coast. John Rhodes, let's talk about this double mutilation story, then we'll get on to the Hollow Earth.
George.
Yes, sir.
Well, I think your listeners would be very interested in this story, as it does actually connect to the first part of what we were talking about with the with the stream beds and the hog farming operations. And it also presents us with a situation in which actually there was anomalous evidence left behind, trace evidence, in which is being investigated right now. At my site, on the very bottom, at the front page of my site at reptiles.com, on the very bottom of it, there's the link saying 2007 cattle mutilations. If you go there, there's some images I'd like to direct the listeners to. And for those people who can't see them, I'll tell you what you're seeing. Back in 2007, or 2006, I should start off, when I was working with Sheriff Kuka up here, I had mentioned to him that we should keep an eye out for mutilations to occur almost a year to the day in 2007. And he asked me why, and I said, well, it's just a matter of a calendar thing. If somebody's testing animals, usually like they like to do the same test the same time of the year, so other environmental factors are kind of negated. And sure enough, I was actually talking to John Peterson, wondering if he had received the check from the eBay sale of the cow skull that was sold on eBay for him. And during that conversation, he brought it to my attention about two more mutilations that occurred in an area just south of Valier that's connected through DePoyer Creek, and it's called DePoyer. And I got in touch with a rancher out there, and he told me, you know, invited me out to the ranch and told, when I got there, he told me that he and a friend of his who was pasturing his cow, his calf out on his property, had found these cows, these calves, young calves out there, and the calves were located in fields about a mile and a half apart from each other. The interesting thing was is that when we got out to the fields, he started telling me that when they arrived on scene, the rain and snow had been falling the night before that night, and when they had got out there in the morning, the ground all around them was muddy and thick and dark-colored. But when they actually got to where the calf was laying, they saw that the ground was actually firm. They stood up on it. It was like standing up on a platform, and it was light in color, and the rain was bouncing off it and could not even get through to the dirt. And they said that it looked like an oily substance was actually on the ground, like something like it was slick.
Mm-hmm.
And the ground actually was formed in a circle, about a 30-foot circle, and the sapling tree line had run right down the center of the circle, and the cow was laying on the inside of the circle. Inside the circle, the crop stubble was actually flattened, and even in between the sapling trees, the stubble was also flattened.
It's funny you say that. In Ellsbury, Missouri, years ago, there was a case of a round circle, cow dead right in the middle, other cows walking around it, would not go in the circle.
Would not go in the circle. In this case, actually, because I think that what's happening is the condition of the cows that repels other animals and predators may be something on the fur itself, because the rain may have washed that off these particular calves. The calves were actually starting to be torn apart by predator action. There was enough in the incision lines to actually see that there were straight line cuts, but most of it was jagged away by teeth tearing. They said that the circles, both situations, even though they were a mile apart, there were the circles that were identical, and a sapling tree line ran right down the middle of the circle, which is really unusual, because it's almost as if those particular locations were chosen on purpose, because they were both identical sets. And I started thinking to myself in looking at these that where I could see the possible missile silos, because up here in Montana, there'd be a lot of Minuteman III missile silos, where that was. In 2006, I was actually getting out charts and drawing lines from the mutilations to the silos to see if there were any connections. And when I found out was something very John Keelish, you know, where the kind of the phenomenon starts chasing you around or playing with you. And people can see this map up on my site. The actual cattle mutilation location, one of the cattle mutilation locations, if you draw a line directly from where the mutilation occurred over the missile silo site and extend it forward in a straight line, it points directly to the hog farm.
Isn't that weird?
So it's almost as if somebody out there is trying to almost play games with the investigators themselves by adjusting the mutilations and the phenomenon to either play games with them or lead them in a certain direction. And, of course, when I started discovering this about the MRSA connection with hog farms and how deadly that is with humans, it started to make kind of sense as to what we might be looking at. Now, I must mention that There was a case back in Delphos, Kansas in 1971 in which a young boy had seen a UFO land,
mm-hmm.
and that ground was almost identical in description of having the rain be repelled away from it. And so what I did is I got in touch with Phyllis Budinger, who is the scientist that did the soil samples in that case. I sent her the soil samples from the mutilation up here in DePoyer, and after analyzing it, she came back last week saying that they had found ammonium nitrate in the soil inside the circles, but the control samples had no traces of ammonium nitrate at all. When I checked with the farmer to see if he had used any ammonium nitrate in the fertilizers, he said that last year he had not fertilized the field, and the year before he did. I contacted the fertilizer supply company and spoke with the manager there. He looked through the rancher's records and said that he got a potassium mix, like a three-way mix with it. But when I asked him if there was ammonium nitrate, he goes, oh, no. He says, it's not worth handling ammonium nitrate anymore because since 9/11, because it's a substance that the Homeland Security is very wary of, he said most ranchers and farmers don't use it anymore. And he says we haven't used that here since shortly after 9/11.
So what is your total conclusion, John? What's going on?
You know, I'm not sure if we're looking at something. We're looking at perhaps two types of propulsion systems that are being used that are actually depositing substances or having a reactive reaction takes place with soil. It's interesting to note that some of these mutilation sites, you know, nothing will grow in them for years to come. And in other mutilation sites, you get nothing but growth. You get more than normal growth in them. And that would make sense if they're ammonium nitrate because it's really good for the soil. So it looks to me like there might be different parties involved. It doesn't look like, I mean, at least as far as their flight platforms are concerned. And it's just one more of those anomalies that says, yes, there's something unusual here that deserves more research into. We do know that there are strange lights seen over the fields in these farms. A lot of these farmers, they're down-to-earth people, but they're the first ones to say that they've seen anomalous lights flying around that are unlike anything else, helicopters without rotors, some of which make no sound at all. So we're not sure if we're using holographic projection methods on saucer craft to make them look like they're military craft when really they're not. So it's the whole game of deception that's going on along with the phenomenon that is very, very intriguing.
Okay, now let's talk, if we can, about the hollow earth. I know it's been a while since you've done some real work there, or do you still touch it a little bit?
Oh, absolutely. The hollow earth is one of my favorite subjects, only in as much as it's where everybody was looking before UFOs came along.
That's true. And some people think the UFOs came from within the hollow earth.
Well, I think there's a great deal of possibility that we're talking about large cavern systems, even if not maybe even a hollow interior to the planet that has some sort of a reaction taking place that produces light and heat, perhaps not to the extent of which scientists believe it is. But, you know, who am I to argue, of course? We're definitely talking about a planet that's just laced with underground caverns and tunnels and cave systems, some of which are several football fields in size and have bioluminescent life forms and rivers and fresh air and cave life and fungal growths. And when before 1947, when everybody was focused on beings from outside our planet, or Jules Verne had presented that, remember, he had provided us with Journey to the Center of the Earth back in 1864, in which talks about people actually journeying into the Earth to find themselves being surrounded by large cavern systems, different types of fungal plant mushroom growths, as well as other beings, some of which look very reptilian humanoid. In 1692, Sir Edmund Halley actually claimed that the causes of the change in the variation of the magnetic needle may be due to structures inside the Earth that were anomalous. In 1838, Congress actually committed $300,000 in approval to search for the world within. Can you imagine that? Our own Congress, let's search for the world within. They wanted to open up trade relations with any kind of lost civilizations or cultures that have been cut off by man living inside the planet. Isn't it interesting how when we are told by our governments that there is no extraterrestrial threat, that they were not actually ever addressing the terrestrial or inner Earth question. It seems to me that there may be certain threats, or there may be certain beings that live inside our planet, and because we continually petition them and use language in the UFO field such as extraterrestrial, we're limiting our scope, and we're limiting the degree of conversation and challenge that we give to our authorities by saying, is there something else, a non-human intelligent entity living in, on, or outside our planet? That's the way we should be stating it, instead of just giving them all these loopholes of denial. So, you know, the Hollow Earth subject matter is interesting also because, you know, the Nazis were involved in it. Hitler wanted to see if they could find an interior, an opening into the interior of the planet. Sir Admiral Byrd was out there in Antarctica at the end of World War II. He was, you know, carrying out Operation High Jump, which actually took a huge combat force down there with ships and ammunition. Some people think it was a mopping operation, but when he did come out of there, he did make the claim that the next war we made would be flying, would be with people or beings that were actually using vehicles that were way beyond our scope of imagination. In addition to that, we've got to remember that Antarctica, which is the, one of the theorized entrances or has a theorized entrance into an interior part of our planet, is one of the only continents in which all nations have agreed that no one nation can claim as their own. Look what's happening up there in the North Pole right now.
You know, I know. They're all squabbling over there.
Man. Everybody's running out there planting flags in the bottom of the water and arguing with each other about who owns what. But that didn't happen in Antarctica. It certainly makes you wonder, because remember, one time that large continent was ice-free, and there is evidence that ages ago, perhaps before a planetary tilt, as mentioned by many scientific philosophers such as Velikovsky and such, that there was civilizations down there, or perhaps even dinosaurs, or perhaps even reptilian humanoids. And because of the nature of some frogs and snakes, I'd hate to think that some of them have been kept on a stasis position through freezing because of glycogens in their bloodstreams that allow them to freeze and then wake up perhaps hundreds if not thousands of years later or millions of years later, because when that flash freeze happened that killed all those woolly mammoth up there, if there was a civilization of reptilian humanoids living deep inside Antarctica where nobody seems to want to own that continent, then I would hate to think that global warming would start thawing them out.
I find fascinating, John, the theory of hell, all right, within the planet, let's say, and the devil, which looks reptilian. To me, there are too many similarities here.
Yes, and we're also talking about a deep part of our own human nature that's attached to the reptilian part of our brain. We all like to live in a conscious state thinking that we're benevolent beings. But deep down within our own subconsciousness, we do have our own archetypes that are terrorizing and we're afraid of. And certain aspects of our own actions can be considered draconian or reptilian. And when we start talking about an antichrist or something being anti-life and being pro-death, we always do associate it with something that looks like a reptilian humanoid. Now, remember, though, the serpent in the Garden of Eden, in the very beginning, the serpent was in the Garden of Eden, and even in Genesis it said that every animal in the garden was good. It was only the active force of a negative principle that worked its way through the serpent. It didn't say that the serpent being was bad himself. It said that evil worked its way through the serpent and spoke through it. And now Jeffrey Dahmer, evil could speak through him, and he was a human.
In a big way.
Right. So we understand it. It's an image that has been shoved down our throats since time immemorial when the Catholic Church wanted us to be afraid of it. But it's almost like the being born with first sin, you know. In other words, here we have something that actually represents the deepest part of your own nature, and we're telling you to fear it. that puts you into a psychological state of instability and an emotional state of instability because you're fearing something that lives within you. And by doing that, you actually disempower yourself and you start looking outside yourself for answers. And that's just what the church fathers wanted because they were right there to give them to you.
Well, I got to tell you, the theory of the hollow earth and the fact that there could be inhabitants in there, to me, is one of the greatest wonders of this planet. What do you think of David Icke's theories that the royal family and others might be reptilians?
Well, I feel that it's entertaining.
It is entertaining.
Yes, it's entertaining.
He says they have lizard eyes.
Well, that's nice. I've worked in the television industry for many years as well, as in addition to my science. And I'm going to tell you right now that seeing reptilian eyes on all those videos is nothing more than just a trick of lights and working on news crews and in television production myself. It's something we're all aware of on the set. The lights in front of a speaker actually are reflecting in the white parts of their eyes, and that more or less gives a visual impression of squeezing out the dark areas of the pupil, leaving only the center that can be seen, which makes it look like vertical. It's not turning vertical. What we are seeing here is just a mania running through the internet of people looking and searching hard for evidence, which is actually non-existent. Because if you think about it, I've seen videos showing David Icke's eyes turn vertical. You know, so what does that say?
What conferences are you going to next, John? Am I going to run into you at all?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to be at the Bay Area UFO Expo, which actually I'm the associate producer of now.
I'll be there.
And I'll look forward to seeing you. We've got a great lineup. And I'll be addressing these subjects and more. In addition to that, my ongoing research has crossed over to the area of quantum physics, portal vortexes, plasma energy beings, and radionics. And I'm currently producing a film script that encompasses all these subjects. So if there's any producers out there that need a creative consultant on their current or future projects, go ahead and give me a call. I'll be more than happy to help you out.
They're all out there, John Rhodes.
Absolutely. And also, stay in tune to the Bay Area UFO Expo website. We're getting ready to actually put online all the workshops that the speakers have provided through the years online, available for downloads for only $5.99 each,
bad.
Which is a great deal considering people charging $20 all over the place for the DVDs.
When is that going to be this year?
I'm sorry?
When is it this year?
September 28th and 29th in San Jose. Just go to the Bay Area UFO Expo. It's Victoria's Jack's production.
How's she feeling?
She's doing much better. Well, you know, she had a liver transplant.
Yep. We all prayed for her.
Oh, my God. And what a remarkable recovery.
It is strange how this works.
And it was really the power of prayer and the power of good thoughts and everything, because she really pulled through nicely. And I want to appreciate all of the listening audience out there who put a good word in for her, because, you know, we need people that help us gather together and push forward the conversation, such as yourself. You're a rare breed, and we need more of you. Sadly enough, there's just not enough. But we have you, and we have Victoria, and we have others like yourselves, and thank you very much.
All right, John, stay with us, because we are coming back with phone calls for you, cryptozoology calls, the lizard man, cattle mutilations, hollow earth, chupacabras. He's the crypto man, so give him a call, the crypto hunter.